Good day and welcome everyone to the Flutter Entertainment Q3 results update call hosted by Peter Jackson, CEO of Flutter Entertainment, along with Jonathan Hill, CFO. My name is Jo and I'm your operator today. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only, but if you do need any assistance, just key star then zero on your telephone and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. If you would like to ask a question today, please key star then one on your telephone. I'd also like to advise that the call today is being recorded and I would like to hand over to your host, Peter. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining our Q3 trading update call. As you said, I've got Jonathan Hill with me this morning, and hopefully you'll all have had a chance to review our statement at this point, so I'll just touch on a few key issues before I open up for questions. Overall, the group had a good third quarter, reporting revenue growth of 12% on the back of 13% growth in AMPs. In the U.K. and Ireland, we grew AMPs by 19%, with flat revenues reflecting challenging sporting calendar comps, less favorable sports results year-on-year, and the ongoing safer gambling initiatives that we have introduced. In Australia, we had a very strong quarter, reporting player growth of 24% and revenue growth of 20%. Sportsbet benefited significantly from the stay-at-home restrictions that were in place during the quarter. We estimate around two-thirds of our turnover in the quarter came from customers in states where COVID-related restrictions were in place, but we remain pleased with the levels of player retention from last year. In international, revenues were in line with our expectations, with revenue up 6% excluding the impact of German regulatory and tax change. We estimate that the unexpected suspension of our Dutch operations will cost us 10 million EBITDA in Q4, and we hope to be licensed in the Netherlands by H2 next year and will invest heavily in that market at that point to re-engage with customers. Finally, in the U.S., we were very pleased with our Q3 performance. In what was certainly the most competitive start to an NFL season to date, where competitors threw pretty much everything at us, we delivered a 42% share of the sports betting market. We also doubled our sports and casino customers year-on-year and are now regularly seeing staking volumes on NFL Sundays that match our Super Bowl performance. As you'll have seen from our statement, sports results since the start of Q4 have gone against us in all regions, with our gross win margin over 400 basis points below expectations. As a result, the EBITDA impact has been 60 million for group ex-U.S. and 15 million for the U.S. The majority of the 60 million lands in the U.K. and Ireland, where football results in particular have gone against us. This is just the business we're in, and sometimes results go against us. The October results are actually just a reversion to the mean in the U.K. and Ireland, where we benefited from favorable results in H1. The recent reversal brings the actual margin for the division back to expected levels for the year. As we look to next year, we're looking forward to continuing to expand our business in the U.S., with a record seven new states expected to go live in one year. Closer to home, it now appears that there may be a delay to the publication of the U.K. Gambling Act white paper. We as a group, though, are not waiting to make changes in this area, as evidenced by the measures we've already introduced this year in areas such as affordability and product staking limits. While the specifics of the Gambling Act review remain unknown, it seems unlikely to us that 2022 will be a normal year of growth for the U.K. online market. As such, we would encourage analysts to consider what a realistic expectation should be for market growth, knowing that the current status quo is unlikely to be retained. Overall, though, I'm very pleased with the underlying health of our business and the progress we're making. Our pro forma online player base is 46% bigger than it was just two years ago, and we look forward to growing that again next year as we further expand in the U.S. and elsewhere. With that, we'll be happy to take any questions. As usual, I would kindly ask you to limit yourselves to two questions each to start with, and then if we have further time, we'll be happy to take any follow-ups. Jo, over to you.
Thank you, Peter. Yeah, everyone, if you would like to ask a question today, please key star then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw that question, simply key star two. Any questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. Just a reminder, everybody, please key star and one on your telephone. Thank you. Our first question is coming from Michael Mitchell from Davy. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Jonathan. Thanks for taking my questions. One on the U.S. and one on the U.K., if I could. Starting with the U.S., and you referenced obviously being encouraged with your own customer engagement at the beginning of the NFL season. It's clearly been a competitive period. I wonder, could you just comment on the competitive intensity of the industry in recent weeks and months, and how FanDuel has fared kind of from a customer engagement perspective through that period? And then secondly, in the UK, as you referenced, since we last spoke, obviously, that, you know, it's becoming more clear that the UK white paper could be delayed beyond the end of the current year. And as you say, 2022 unlikely to be the year that, you know, was kind of previously anticipated. I wonder what your own thoughts are in terms of what UK online market growth could be in 2022. Thank you.
Morning, Michael. Well, look, if I take your questions in the order in which you've put them, you know, look, the competitive situation in the US with the launch of the NFL was the, you know, the most severe that we've experienced so far. I mean, I think every year we expect to see, you know, renewed levels of competition, and that, you know, that was the case this year. People you know, trying to claim their positions in the market. And, you know, there was a lot of sort of free money flowing around. So, you know, I think we were very pleased with the way in which we performed. If you look at the market share figures that we've shared, you know, in the release this morning, we, you know, we were I think, you know, very pleased with the outcome that we've seen. You know, clearly, you know, benefiting from the partnership we have with the NFL, and of course, we've now got the NBA season restarting, and I think we're, you know, we're pleased with the way that is performing. I think ultimately, whilst competitors may be giving customers sort of effectively free money and, you know, very enticing looking levels of free bets, what people ultimately want are great products, and we have the best products in America, and that's what has customers coming back to our platform time and time again. And I think that's what's standing us in good stead at the moment in the US. And, you know, I talked about our parlay products in the past, for example. The fact that that's well integrated into our products, I think, is really helpful for us. And so, you know, we're pleased with the way that the business has performed in this football season. And I, you know, I think you know, kudos to the team under Amy's leadership, who've done such a great job for us. As it relates to the UK and the publication of the white paper, I mean, look, it's obvious that the UK government has some very significant issues to wrestle with at the moment, and actually a number of those you know, issues rest with DCMS. So, look, whilst I know that the publication of the white paper is important, it's probably not their utmost priority at the moment. In the meantime, though, we have been, you know, very much focused on putting in place a number of actions to support our focus on safe gambling, and if you look at, you know, the things we're doing, whether it's the daily deposit limits, the £10 slot stake limits, the mandatory deposit limits for, you know, 18 to 21 year olds, banning credit cards in Ireland, the under 25 policy changes that we've communicated will be bringing into place at the end of the year, and some very significant enhancements to the way in which we engage and communicate with customers, we're doing an awful lot. And I think that is important. And I think we shouldn't expect there to be a sort of big bang set of changes that come from the publication of the white paper. I think there's going to be a number of changes which operators choose to make. I think there'll be some regulatory interventions, and I think there'll possibly be some changes which will be encouraged by the Gambling Commission. So I think with all of those things happening, I know it's very difficult to try and assess the impact of them, but I think it would be hard to imagine that the online market in the UK would experience any real growth into next year with the battery, you know, in the face of all those interventions and changes which we expect to happen in the market.
Great. Thanks for the colour, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Ed Young from MS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my two. I also have one in the UK and one in the US. Perhaps with the UK to start with, the £60 million impact you've quantified from margins this year appears to be mechanically sort of assuming not a lot of benefit from recycling going forward, or perhaps a very normalised situation for the following 2 months, rather than any kind of benefit from increased staking. Is there a particular reason that's the case? Is there anything changing in play behaviour? Any reason why you haven't done that, or is it sort of conservatism for why that appears to be a relatively large impact for a relatively short period. And the second one on the US, you mentioned the promotional environment there. I wonder if you just give any view on the percentage of players or the rough proportion of players and the market share of players you have who are soloist customers of your product. Obviously, it's one of the strengths in the UK, particularly in Skybet. You've got a lot of players who only play with that brand. Just in an environment where money is being thrown around, I'm just wondering if those kind of customers are generally going to be less loyal than perhaps you experience. So any comment on soloist users would be appreciated. Thanks.
Yeah, so Ed, maybe I can take the first. Certainly the 60 million is the point that we find ourselves at the end of the 24th of October, but I would just cast back to earlier in the year where we've seen, particularly in UK and I, positive sports results. In fact, all the way through to the 30th of September, which we then managed to give back all of that by the 24th of October to end up relatively flat. But during that first nine-month period, even though we were experiencing, bookmaker-friendly results, we didn't really see a degradation in the staking levels during that period. And while we were looking for those trends, we didn't necessarily spot them. So, what will happen from here to the end of the year? I think we've taken a sensible view of presenting you where we are at this point. Will some of that come back through recycling? We would hope so. Have we baked that in? Not at this point, because obviously we don't exactly know, given what we've seen in the first 9 months of the year and those correlations between staking and results.
Ed, with regards to your US question, I think typically we see that US consumers have many less accounts. So, they're much more likely to have, one account than we would see in the equivalent situation in the UK. And partly that's because of the onerous degree of opening an account and having to share people's social security details and that type of thing. So, people are more likely to have a smaller number of accounts. And certainly when we look at the metrics that we can see, which is the lifetime values, one of the metrics that we've been really pleased with is the extent to which we've seen very high degrees of retention from customers, and we've seen very frequent use of the product. And that leads us to believe that we have a very high share of those customers' wallets. So it's hard to gauge as clearly as we can do in the UK market with someone like Skybet, where we know we have so many soloist customers. But I think we've been very pleased with the way that customers have been engaging with us. And I think what we've seen is, even if they've availed themselves of some free money effectively in around these promotions, when we look at the sort of staking handle volumes on our platform, we believe customers are coming back and giving us the majority of their business.
I think the other point I'd add is the place where we probably see in our existing business very high levels of solus is in highly recreational businesses. So when we look at Skybet, when we look at Sportsbet, and we aren't necessarily in the US market at that highly recreational end, which we've got in those other two businesses at this stage in its evolution of development.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Simon Davis from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Morning. Two from me, please. Firstly, you refer to a new reward scheme for the PokerStars brand. Can you talk us through how that works, the mechanics and the likely costs of this? And what are your expectations on poker and your ability to return that product vertical to growth? And secondly, can you talk about the most recent state launches, Arizona and Connecticut, and what you're seeing there in terms of the competitive landscape and volume levels relative to expectations? Thanks.
Yeah. Morning, Simon. So, look, I think it's in what we're doing with poker, we've done quite a sort of substantial change in the way in which the reward scheme works. And it's probably not quite the time for me to share all the full details on this call now, because it takes a lot of time up for me to take you through all the details. So we can get something to you if you'd like to see it in detail. But essentially, we have increased the level of generosity that we make available to customers on the platform. And we think it's going to help retain customers on on our site and sort of boost our share of liquidity. I think when we think about growth prospects, though, we have to look at it from a customer perspective rather than a product standpoint. And if I take September, we saw a record high level of GGR from our casino acquired customers in that month, and I think it's a good indication of our focus and that we have for the business. So casino is a very important part of what we do, and when we think about it from a customer perspective, that's where the growth is coming from. So no matter where we source the customers from, whether it is casino directly or into poker first and then into cross-sold into casino, that's where we see the real areas of growth coming from.
A couple other points just on the sort of poker business and the scheme. We've obviously been trialing that with 20% of our base, and we've seen some very positive reaction from the customers, and therefore we expect that when we roll this out further, it will lead to greater levels of engagement with the customer base. And I think we feel as if the sort of poker market share quarter on quarter is relatively stable, and we like to think that we've sort of abated some of that decline through recent actions, and obviously we're looking to make sure that we can maintain, if not try and push forward with that market share position that we have in the poker business.
And look, Simon, in terms of the state launches, I think I would look and characterize some of the sort of the, and it's not really fair to say the mature states, but places like New Jersey and Pennsylvania, where we've been operating for a while, it sometimes feels like some of the other operators have given up in those markets because they see that we've got such a strong and commanding lead. And so I think in the newer states, we see that new operators will try really hard to compete with us. And so I think we're particularly pleased with the way in which we performed in Arizona. We've seen that market mature sort of and grow more quickly than any other market, and I think we've done an incredible job of taking great share in that market. So I'm really pleased with what we've done to date. And of course, actually, Arizona itself is a state where we didn't have the benefits of the DFS base to cross sell into, and we're reliant entirely on the quality of our product and the strength of our brand. And I think the fact that we've done so well in that market shows how well both our product and brand stand in the eyes of the consumers interested in sports betting. So whether it's the older states or the newer states, I think the business is performing well across the full spectrum.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of David Brohan from Goodbody. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just one question for me. On the Netherlands, could you just break down the guidance for next year, kind of the bridge between your 10 million in Q4 and then 40 million for FY22, given kind of plans to be break even in H2. Is that a kind of significant marketing push in advance of H2, or what's the kind of driver there?
Yeah, so the assumption is that we are often in H1 and we reactivate ourselves in H2, and then clearly there are operators who will be remaining on during the whole period, and we will have to re-engage, a bit like our return to sport program last year in the States when it had been off for ages. We're going to have to re-engage our PokerStars customers, make sure we get them back onto the platform and betting with us, and therefore that's how we've guided the 40 number for next year.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Monique Pollard from Citi. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. A couple of questions from me, if I can, both on the US, please. The first was just, obviously, thinking about the US revenue guidance being maintained despite the poor sports results. And I'm assuming earlier when you were saying, you weren't taking into account recycling for the rest of the year, that will be for the US as well. So is it right in thinking you would have had a significant revenue upgrade for 2021 to your US guidance ex those results? And then secondly, US iGaming. You mentioned in the statement that you've got a new gaming promotions platform that's now live, and that's providing some flexibility to reward multi-product players. Just trying to understand if you can give any guidance on how the proportion of your customers that are now playing both iGaming and sports, and where you think that could go over time.
Can I deal with the first one?
Yeah, please.
So, in terms of the first question, obviously we talked about 15 million sterling of revenue impact, EBITDA impact. You know, that when you gross that up, you probably get to around $50 million. The other thing you need to recognize, Monique, is that as we go through the year, we'll also make decisions between whether we spend money on our customers either through the marketing line or through the promotions line. So, you know, we can decide a dollar is better spent in a promotion than it is necessarily in marketing. So, you know, we'll make decisions, and we have done as we've gone through the start of the NFL season to move some of that spend around. So, you know, we need to take all of these things into consideration. It's not just a binary, every extra dollar of revenue would go on to the guidance. So overall, we're managing within that sort of that envelope.
Yeah, look, and Monique, in terms of the point about iGaming, I mean, I think we've acknowledged in the past that there's more for us to do in this area. And as, you know, part of that was the launch of our sort of in-house promotions platform, which, you know, we've acknowledged we've now got out into the market. You know, we're excited to see the capabilities that brings us and the opportunities it provides to us. The best place for us to start is the fact that we have the most sports betting customers in the United States and a very strong brand, and that's what we're cross-selling into.
Yeah.
And we see that the levels of cross-selling are higher in the US than we had originally anticipated. That's actually one of the things that's been supporting the higher LTVs that we're seeing in the market, and it's certainly higher than we would have experienced in the European markets. So yeah, that's something that we're very much focused on, you know, and continuing to try and take advantage of the strength of our sports franchise in the US.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Joe Stauff from Susquehanna. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Two questions on the US, if I could. I'm wondering, maybe in September, you know, with certainly the start of the sports calendar here, if the mix for sports betting revenue for you guys, if the mix or the product mix is notably different at this point, you know, pregame, same game parlay, and in play, or is that something that you would expect is more likely to change, say, going forward? And then I have a follow-up, please.
Do you want to give us the follow-up, Joe?
Sure. The follow-up is just asking about trends for, you know, monthly active users in October, as well as if you saw the promotional environment somewhat normalized maybe by the end of October, or was it still pretty heavily promotional through the end of October in the U.S., of course?
Okay. Well, look, let me pick those up, Joe. So look, the first thing to say is, you know, from the biggest impact on our mix between sort of, you know, pre-game, you know, same game in play and all that sort of stuff is driven by the sports. So we do see different levels of penetration based on the different leagues that are into vogue at the time. So, you know, actually, for example, baseball has not been as popular, as we would have probably thought for some of the, in-play products. When I think certainly about the analogies with it to cricket. But if you look at the point in time we're at the moment, NBA is something where, you know, we have a, you know, we feel like we have a sort of a real advantage, and it really plays to our strengths. And so the extent to which we're seeing take up of the same game parlay, across our customer base is something that we're really pleased with, the performance of that at the moment. And, you know, that's partly driven by the fact that we're seeing increased levels of recreational customers. It's partly due to the promotions we're doing. It's, you know, and it's partly due to the way in which we're sort of getting better at integrating and promoting and sort of making available to our customers on our platform. So, you know, that's something which we know is important to customers, and I think we're really trying to sort of dial that up at the moment. In terms of our, you know, the trends we're seeing around promotions, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, really focus their promotional firepower around the launch of the football season, and you know, are beginning to sort of run out of dry powder to some extent. And, we have been aggressive, as you'd expect to throughout the throughout this period, and will continue to be so, but in a relatively disciplined way, as we always have been in the States. And I think we are taking advantage of the opportunities. The partnership we have with NFL is something which we've been trying to exploit through the start of the NFL, and with the NBA coming on stream now, that's also a league where we have very strong ties, great product available, and something that customers are really engaging in. So we think that some of the people who've tried to sort of grab some of the market early in the football season have probably a little bit running out of steam, and we're continuing to push hard and trying to exploit our leadership position.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Daniel Pulitzer from Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and thanks for taking my questions. So a couple on the U.S. Any updated thoughts on timing for a listing there now that you have a new CEO installed? And the second would be, any changes in terms of cadence for your expectation to be profitable in 2023 in the U.S., given the heightened level of promotions you've been mentioning?
So, good morning. Look, we're very focused on winning in America, and we're pleased that we're continuing to do so. That's what we've tasked Amy and the team to do, and to also take advantage of all the new states that are coming on stream. We shouldn't forget, we've had some very successful launches this year. We've got 7 more to focus on next year. And, that's a massive lift for any business to do. We want to continue to ensure that we position ourselves well for that. The point about the sort of increased competitive activity is something that we had anticipated. It's not been a surprise to us. It seems to happen every year, but it hasn't changed any of our views on the extent to which we would reach profitability. The thing that we're closely watching and monitoring is the extent to which any of the very large states could potentially introduce regulation and come on stream, which would obviously have a bearing on the amount of money we'd invest in trying to take advantage of them opening up.
I mean, I think also as we look at the maturing of the, I was going to say the mature states, but they're not mature states. I mean, they're going to be going for maybe 3-4 years max. Those are going in line with our expectations in terms of contribution. So we feel pretty confident there. And then the second thing is, we expect to exit next year with 20 states versus the 12 we're live in at the minute. It's the game of, the existing states versus new states. And as we enter 2023 with 20 existing states, we feel pretty well set up for our expectations for 23.
Got it. Thanks, guys, and everyone.
Thank you. I will just give a quick reminder, if anybody would like to ask a question today, please key star then 1 on your telephone. So star then 1 to ask a question. Thank you. And next question is coming from the line of Richard Stuber from Numis. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. 2 questions for me, please. The first, in the 7 states that you expect to launch next year, are the economics broadly similar to the states where you're currently live, or are the newly regulating states of wanting a greater share of the economics? And the second question, not just in gaming, but I think elsewhere, there's lots of commentary around labour cost inflation. Are you seeing that in any of your geographies, particularly in the US, and in particular jobs? Thank you.
Morning, Richard. Look, I mean, I think the most important thing for us in the next 7 states to go live is that they are predominantly sports states, and so that definitely plays to our advantage. And look, you're right to think about the impact of market access costs, and that's something that people don't always focus on. But I think for us, the most important dynamic for us is the CAC to LTV dynamic, and we know that where we can lean heavily on to being sports-led, which most of those states are. We have a real advantage in being able to utilize both the strength of our brand but also our DFS database to get lower acquisition costs than anybody else has in the market. And then the strength of the products enables us to drive higher LTVs. And so I think we're excited to see what we can do in those 7 states. that we launch in next year. It's in terms of the labour cost inflation. Look, it is impacting all businesses around the world. I think the areas that I'd probably call out that it's that we're seeing the most pressures in are around the sort of tech and engineering roles, where there is a degree of heightened sort of inflation, and there are more people sort of on the move, seeking more flexibility in the ways in which they're working, and we're trying hard to make sure that we can provide them with a great sort of employee value proposition and keep them engaged in our business. I mean, ultimately people want to work for somewhere that they can have fun and engage and believe in what the organization's trying to do, and people like working for winning businesses. And so we're hopeful that we can continue to attract and retain the great talent that's helped us be so successful so far.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Peter, I was interested in your comments on the UK not likely to have much growth next year. Is that, when you talk about interventions, are you talking specifically about the interventions that you've made on maximum staking limits, etc.? I'm just wondering how much in a full year those things are likely to cost. And then secondly, just on back to the US, also interested in your comments about competitors running out of a bit of steam. Do I take it that a lot of the competitive intensity has come from some of the smaller sort of startup type businesses that might be less capitalized?
Look, morning, Joe. So look, in terms of the UK, I think it's, we need, my observation was really just trying to sort of provide some views on what we thought and think would happen to the market as a whole. So, not just us. And I think there's going to be a range of interventions that the government may instigate, that the regulators will impose, and operators will put in place themselves. And I don't think it will happen over a weekend. I think it's something which is going to happen in a series of steps. And so it's on that basis that I think it's hard to believe you'd see any real growth in the UK market next year. As to the specifics of which action is leading to that, it's very difficult to determine. And of course, there's a number of overlapping actions which can happen in any event. So that's the basis in which I was making the observations. And look, in the US market, it is a bit of a sort of land grab at the moment, and it's both from some of the more startup type businesses, although none of these are startups because they're big likes of casino groups, like who are throwing money around, as well as some of those of the pure play digital businesses. So none of these are poorly funded ten people startups. These are reasonable operations, but there's only so much funding any of these businesses can access and provide free money to people before they eventually run out of it.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Kiranjot Grewal from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I think a lot of my questions have been answered, but just quickly on margins. Across the industry, we saw margins benefiting over the last 12 months or so due to a growing mix of recreational customers online. Could you perhaps comment on how that mix of online customers is changing now that things are going back to normal? And also, second question, there's a lot of consolidation happening in the market at the moment, including the US. When do you think the right time is for you guys to maybe start pushing for your other US brands as well in terms of customer capture, or is this something that you're already working on? Thank you.
Kiranjot, good morning. Look, from a margin perspective, we are continuing to push hard to acquire as many recreational customers as we can. And that's, and I think, the bet mix and bet type from those customers has helped support a growth in expected margin. There is, inevitably more volatility when you get into sort of the parlay type bets, because whilst they can be, higher margins when they're positive, they can also then be more deeply negative when they're loss making. And so, the couple of weeks that we called out in football, where we're loss making in the UK, that was driven by 14 of the 15 favourites winning in the international break, or 15 of the 16 favourites winning in the Champions League. And so, when that happens and people have put sort of accumulator type bets on, the impact is quite significant. Albeit when things are positive, it's very positive. But as Jonathan Mingus said, we've now got ourselves back to the point where sort of expected margins are back to where we expected them to be, albeit the benefits of 9 months and rolled back quite quickly in 24 days in October.
Look, I think the bet mix is giving us an uplift in the sort of gross win margins. Then if you look at what we then do with that gross win margin, particularly in something like Australia, which we obviously did the Capital Markets Day, we're then reinvesting some of that upside to help drive customer engagement and the size of our business through either the promotions or the marketing line. And you can see how you get back to that, the flywheel effect from being able to get greater gross win margins, being able to give back more to the customers, driving customer engagement, driving customer growth. And I think that's perfectly illustrated by the presentation. Hopefully we gave hopefully you took that out of the presentation we gave to you on Australia recently.
And look, to the point about consolidation, I think we've been at the forefront of a lot of consolidation in the industry over the last several years. We do believe that diversification and scale are important in this sector, and it appears that other people are beginning to believe that's also true as well.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Clark Lampton from BTIG. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks. Two for me, please. The first is on advertising. Peter, there seems to be more of a focus lately from U.S. officials on advertising frequency and visibility. I'd love to know whether you think the U.S. over-indexes on either front, maybe relative to some of your other larger markets, or if we're at a point now where you think operators will have to consider maybe paring back advertising to avoid potential limitations. The second question I have is on product differentiation. There seems to be a perception that as your competitors are adding parlay options and deepening those markets, that your advantages from a competitive standpoint might start to erode. What do we miss there with that sort of high-level comparison of parlay options between you and your competition? Do you expect that you're going to continue to lead on market depth, perhaps with product innovation? Is there something else that we're missing?
Hi, Clark. Look, it's in terms of the two points you raised in the U.S. market, which I think are important. But from an advertising perspective, we operate in many markets around the world, and we have often tried to take the lead in trying to push and sort of nudge the industry into getting to a more sustainable level of marketing. Marketing expenditure. We would expect to want to continue to do that in the U.S. market as well. It doesn't surprise me that there are some people beginning to sort of ask questions about sort of the frequency and visibility. Clearly the launch of this football season, there has been a sort of pretty significant level of marketing expenditure by lots of operators in the market. With regards to your sort of second question around sort of product differentiation. Now, I think if I look in a market like Australia, we have consistently led the market there with the sort of quality of our execution around things like parlays. And look, it's relatively easy to go and acquire the rights to a parlay product from a third party. The issue with that, of course, is you give away all the upside, and then from a customer experience perspective, it's not an integrated product. And so you can't then have the same sort of association with your generosity and promotional mechanics on your product. Sometimes customers may have to go to a different tab. It just may not be as intuitive an experience. And so we believe that we can maintain our leadership from a customer experience perspective in and around the parlay product. It's something we've done consistently in Australia. And whilst competitors may be sort of acquiring rights to third-party products to try to catch up with where we are, rest assured that we have many fantastic engineers in the US striving to keep us ahead of those competitors. And of course, you know, uniquely, you know, amongst US businesses, we have thousands of cheerleaders around the world in our other businesses who are also building products which they can use and engage in the US market to try and maintain our leadership as well.
I think from the Aussie presentation, there was a very interesting phrase that Ben used, which is it's all the 1%. And that's about making sure that every element of the customer experience, that from when they log in right through to placing a singles bet through to a same game parlay through to whatever else they want to do, is done in a way that makes it super easy for the customer. Just sticking a same game parlay on the side of your app isn't the way to make that a seamless and great user experience. So there are many, many things that lead to product differentiation rather than just having a product or not having a product.
Yeah, and look, the final point I'd make, Clark, you know, which I think is important, sometimes people forget this, is that, you know, really the heart of our product is our, you know, pricing and risk management capability, you know, the sort of risk and trading stuff. And, you know, we spent some time on this call talking about the fact that sports results have gone against us. But, you know, the most important thing is to get your probability and pricing as accurate as possible. And, you know, we have many years of experience of that with 650 people, you know, assessing and developing models and pricing and trading for us around the world. And that stands us in really good stead in the States, which gives us the best sort of depth of markets, which customers love. But also when you get the pricing accurate on them, you effectively get the better margins in the end. Look, I think that's the end of all of our questions. So, you know, thank you very much, everybody. We are very pleased with the extent to which we've been able to grow our player base over the course of this year, and look forward to doing so next year. 2022 is going to give us a number of new states and opportunities to continue to grow the business, and we look forward to seeing what we can do with our fantastic challenger brands around the world. So thank you.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you, everyone. That does conclude your call for today. You may now disconnect. Thanks again for joining, and enjoy the rest of the day.